Sairam, dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, our studios here. And along with me, I have Brother Arvind. And we have a very interesting topic today. We have gone through many interesting topics. And in a sense, many of them have been raging debates. We are going to take up one such topic. And I remember being a part of many debates where this was discussed. But before we reveal the topic to you, before we begin our journey today, we begin by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagavan's lotus feet and pray to him to guide our thoughts and our words. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and as you rightly said, there appear to be some debates in the world which apparently have no resolution. And I remember one kind of cliched question that is often used to describe such debates. It is often asked, did the hen come first or the egg come first?
Right.
Because there's no hen without the egg, but there's no egg without the hen. Interestingly, as I got to know from a teacher, this was a question that was posed to Swami also, on whether the hen came first or the egg came first.
Okay.
And on that occasion, Swami, you know, gave the answer that it is the egg that came first.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I mean, there was no further reasoning.
Okay.
And I think he used andaja or the Sanskrit term for the egg. But he said that is what that came first. And after that, the teacher says that when anybody asks him that this is a tough question, it is like asking whether the hen came or the egg came first. He says, no, it is a tough question, but it's not like this question, because this question has a resolution. That is, the egg came first.
Okay.
So, as far as that episode goes, it is like the egg came first, and that is what Swami said.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask me for proof, I am just saying it based on my faith. So, speaking of faith, it comes to today's topic on whether it is faith that leads to an experience in a person's life, or an experience that leads a person to inculcate faith. We have got a lot of incidents and experiences where a person's faith stands redeemed because of a miraculous or an out-of-the-world experience that he or she gets. At the same time, we have episodes and experiences where a person does not apparently have faith, but something out-of-the-world happens to him. He or she experiences something miraculous, after which he or she develops faith. So it is natural that we get this question on which comes first, whether we develop faith which leads to an experience, or whether we get an experience which leads to faith. But somehow deep within in my heart, I just feel that just like the hen and eggs situation had a resolution, possibly this question too will have its resolution, though apparently it seems like a never-ending loop.
Right. I mean, even as you're saying that, Swami had hinted what was the, which came first, egg or the hen. I think even here, the resolution is already there even before we start.
Hmm.
Because Swami has categorically said on many occasions that it is always faith that leads to experience. As you said, we accept it. But in many sense, I think it's also important to realize why Swami says that, and you know, what is the rationale behind Swami saying that faith comes before experience. Because even as we were preparing this, dear listeners, we found that that understanding by itself can bring a lot of clarity to our otherwise muddled approach to Swami. So I think that is the idea here. And also, even as you were saying that how people came and you know, they witnessed something miraculous and that was the basis for their faith. We've done two satsangs on that, you know, they came and they got conquered.
They came, they saw, he conquered.
I think that was the main, the basis of those topics which we took up was that people who came without faith went through an experience which could not be refuted in any means, and that led to them having faith.
You know, Prem, this is nice that we discuss these episodes. It's often, I feel, that the success stories that become discussing points. But, you know, personally, though I would not like to name people,
mm-hmm.
I personally know of at least 2-3 people who were, for example, you know, in quotes, devotees of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba.
Okay.
And a tragedy occurs in life. A son passes away, or something else, you know, a mother passes away, different instances where different tragic circumstances happen. And after that, these people do not want to have anything to do with Swami, with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. They say that no use. I mean, it starts off with as literal as pulling down all his pictures at home and packing them up or discarding them or giving it to some other, if they're a little decent, they give it off to some other devotee. If it is not, if they just vent their emotion, they just break it and throw it. And this is not something new because Swami himself refers to it in his discourses where he says that when your desires are fulfilled, you worship and offer, you know, offer to God. You say that if this happens, I will do this Narayan Seva, or you make promises of gifts to God.
Mm-hmm.
But when your wishes are not fulfilled, you will take down all the photographs. Swami uses the same words. He says you take down all the pictures from your home. So, you know, in that sense also, if we see, it intuitively feels like faith has to come first, because if it's experience that is going to lead to faith, experiences has also led to demolishing of faith.
Very true. You know, very often when you talk about Swami's absolutely out of the world miracles and leelas, we often tend to refer to those times in the old Mandir days when Swami was doing miracles in Chitravati. And we've quoted from Mrs. Vijay Kumari, you know, her book, Anyatha Sharanam Nasti. She talks of how they have these experiences of seeing the third eye, seeing the sun and seeing the moon and Swami, and seeing Swami's face cover the entire horizon and all that, you know. In fact, she, I don't know whether she puts it in that book, but she was telling us when we had a conversation with her, you know, she says that there were so many people who noticed, who witnessed all that. It was not just our family. I mean, it was not an experience of an individual. We as a group saw that. You know, children from 8-year-olds to 8-year-old, you know, men and women saw that. It was a blessing which was granted to that entire group, which is quite rare. You know, sometimes individuals have vision. But she said, but the interesting thing is, many of those people are not there right now. Many of them stopped coming to Swami after a few decades. So if we are going by the pretext that an experience, and at that a very beautiful and, you know, mind-boggling experience can give you that much amount of faith, proportionally it will lead to faith, then what about all these people? How do you explain people losing their way after having witnessed something like that?
You know, at the same time, Prem, in sharp contrast to what you narrated, about 2 weeks ago, I was walking near the South Indian canteen in Prashanthi Nilayam, and I was accosted by a lady from, I think, the Latin American country.
Okay.
I don't remember the country. And she was a very, very elderly lady and she could not speak English.
Okay.
And so she had along with her another young lady who could speak English. And she was just expressing her joy as to how wonderful it is. Radio Sai is doing so much good and she was thrilled. Then she introduced that young lady herself who was doing the translation.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that it was the first time she was coming to Prashanthi Nilayam. That is in 2014. And so I just asked her, what do you feel about Prashanthi Nilayam? She's saying, oh my God, I have found my Lord. So I asked her, what was that experience that is making you feel that you have found your Lord? She's saying, you know, from 4 years I've been pining to come here. I've not been able to come and now I have come. And I don't know how to describe it to you. I think you can understand when I just say that the feeling is fantastic and I know that I have found my Lord. So, you know, for a logical mind, what sort of an experience this is? I mean, there's no miracle, nothing. You came here and based on what you feel, you're convinced that you have found your Lord. So, while on one hand, we have people who have had mind-blowing experiences or have witnessed mind-blowing miracles, things that cannot be explained even with modern science, yet having their faith shattered, here are some people who have apparently developed faith with an experience that we would consider as something very, very ephemeral and maybe very emotional kind of. But that is something unexplainable or in quotes illogical. I would not use the word illogical. Faith is apparently something that is beyond logic.
Right. But, you know, the thing which causes confusion is in everyday life, whenever we place our faith on somebody, it's based on some experience, you know, it's based on some good experience.
Mm.
Or even if we decide not to have faith on a certain person, it's again based on experience. You know, a bad experience or a good experience. That is what governs the way we deal with that person or that institution, isn't it?
Exactly. You know, right now, even as you say this, I had placed an order for a delivery of a book from Amazon.com.
Okay.
And the courier person calls me and says that, you know, there's some problem, I can't deliver it, can you come and collect it here or else I won't, I'm going, I'm leaving. It really irritated me. And I said to that courier person that it is your job to deliver it at home, you better do it. It was a long conversation. But basically, at that moment, you know, just half an hour back, I just felt that, you know, next time I want to buy a book, I'm going to buy it from, say, Flipkart, another online store. I mean, in all for all purposes and in all other things, possibly Amazon is as good as Flipkart, if not better. But just my bad experience with a courier person could make me feel that I will choose one over the other.
Right.
And at the same time, I feel if I had a good experience, I'm going to stick to that. So as you rightly said, my faith in one company over the other could just be because the company in which I place faith has given me a good experience and the company in which I have no faith now has given me a bad experience. In fact, now I have faith in the company that it's going to give me a bad experience, so I don't want it.
Right.
So that is really correct.
Or the other option would be like, suppose I suddenly see you one day and say, I noticed that you have a very good haircut. I might come and ask you, Arun, where did you have a haircut? Let me go to the same barber. No, because the idea is, if it works for somebody else, you know, you even go by someone else's experience. It need not necessarily be that your experience, but somebody else whom you trust. You know, or suppose I want to buy something and I go and ask a friend, you know, I want to buy this particular object. Do you know where it is available? So he might say, no, I've tried it out. This place is bad and this place is good. So we always tend to, you know, build our faith or our trust on something based on either our own experiences or somebody else's experience.
Exactly. You know, this whole concept of customer reviews.
Right.
And even if you go to any of these major online stores, they have two kinds of customer reviews. One is reviews. The other is they call it as a certified buyer.
Right.
Which means you automatically place greater weightage on that because you know that this person has bought this thing from here.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you say, yes, faith apparently seems to develop based on our own experiences and based on experiences of our near and dear ones or of people whom we trust. It is like our faith in those, our trust and faith in those people gets rubbed on to the faith and trust, gets rubbed on and develops into faith and trust into those objects.
Right. But maybe it is different when you come to Swami. But you know, even before you talk about having faith in Swami, not having faith, how people have approached this particular relationship with Swami. I mean, the bigger picture is whether there is or there is not the entity called God. Isn't that, you know, whether you're right in believing that there is something which governs you from above and overlordship, or is there anything like there is a divinity at all?
Like, yeah, you know, that is a separate debate altogether,
right.
Possibly, Prem.
And no, that is the thing, you know, for a devotee, let us say anybody like us, I remember talking to some elderly devotees. She said that, you know, when I walk into the garden and I see the beautiful butterfly, I mean, that butterfly's wings look so attractive. And when I see it, I'm reminded of God. He said, definitely it must be God. I mean, who else can make something which is so beautiful? There's definitely a creator. You know, for a person who has decided not to believe that there is no God, you know, he's decided to be an atheist, he's definitely not going to see that and get the same experience. So I think even there, it kind of hints that the faith actually decides the nature of the experience that you go through.
You know, Prem, the opposite of faith is doubt.
Right.
So wherever it's like light and darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever there is darkness, you can be sure that it's opposite, light exists. In the same way, you know, you can just like you can recognize the existence of light with darkness, you can recognize the existence of faith with doubt. So it is like wherever, if you see doubt in anything, it is definitely a proof that faith exists. Okay,
right.
I'm just trying to say how faith is such an important and fundamental aspect of our life. You take an atheist, for example. I remember the famous scientist, Richard Dawkins.
Right, Richard Dawkins.
He is a proclaimed atheist. And he was asked once, what would happen if suddenly he heard the voice of God? Or if God were to make an appearance before him?
Okay.
And he just, you know, laughed it away. And then he said on a serious note that is possibly my worst nightmare coming true. I just hope that it doesn't happen. I mean, you know, there you can again see doubt. It is not just as a person who has faith in God says that, you know, I have put my heart and soul in this and I have my faith in Swami. I just hope that this works out.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody says like that, you see a sliver of doubt and you say, hey, you know what, possibly your faith in God is not absolute. So in the same way, this atheist's faith in the non-existence of God is not absolute, because somewhere below he has a fear that, oh my God, what do I do if suddenly this God appears? So, to be a theist as well as to be an atheist, I feel you need to have absolute faith. You cannot have doubt. So, faith is something that is very, very fundamental that all of us need. And I think on Radio Sai, when we are discussing, we'll leave out the atheist faith where you are convinced that there can't be God, because our scope does not include that. We shall take for granted that we are addressing or we are discussing having the satsang only among people who have faith that God is there, and it's only about developing complete faith and trust in that God.
You know, the interesting thing is, according to the Indian way of gathering knowledge, it says for a student, first and foremost, what needs to be there is humility. In fact, if you see humility, it's a kind of glorified doubt. In the sense, let's say he's an atheist. He believes in a certain set of principles which has come with reasoning. But he always entertains a certain amount of doubt, saying that I may be wrong. You know, giving a scope for learning to happen. He's saying, yeah, this is the understanding I've come to, but I may be wrong. I mean, I don't know everything in the world. There may be so many things which I don't know. So then I may be wrong. So you already are ready for learning something new. So it's a glorified doubt in a sense, you know, humility. But I remember, I think when Bhagya sir was here, he was telling a very beautiful incident where in an interview he asked Swami, that Swami, there are so many people around you. I don't think everybody really believes that, you know, you are the ultimate divine or something like that. So Swami, as part of the discourse he was delivering to those teachers, no, he said, there are three sets of people. There are some who are awake. You don't need to wake them up. They're already awake. There are some who are sleeping. Okay? And you can wake them up. If somebody is there who is awake, they can go and wake them up. Then Swami said, there are some who are awake, I mean who are asleep, but they think they are awake. Okay? The translator who was translating the discourse, the usual thing is there are people who pretend to be asleep.
Sleeping, yeah.
So you cannot wake them up. So he said that. So there are some people who pretend to be asleep, so they cannot be woken up.
In fact, Prem, when you made the statement now, I just thought that you slipped in your tongue.
Yeah, exactly. The translator too thought that Swami actually got it wrong. He got it, you know, upside down. But Swami stopped the translator and said, no, that is not what I said. And Swami repeated, it seems the second time again the translator did the same mistake. Then Swami told himself in English. Swami said, but those who are asleep, but they don't know that they are asleep, they think they are awake, even God cannot help them. You know, that's what when you see, if you see an atheist, there's nothing wrong in having your own ideas and, you know, but if you feel that this is it, there cannot be anything more than this. Which means you are actually asleep, but you are convincing yourself that you're awake. You know, you close all options for learning. So I think that is the most dangerous part. You know, it's nothing wrong in being a theist or an atheist, a believer or non-believer, but be ready to learn, you know, more than anything else.
As you rightly said, you know, in the Indian way of life, I believe atheism is also considered as one more path to the truth.
Right.
It is called the quest of truth, and there are different paths, and atheism is also a path to the truth.
Right.
So it's fantastic, and I feel this kind of freedom is what the Bharatiya Sanatana Samskriti gives, where literally every path leads to the same truth. Only thing is you have to be honest to the path.
Absolutely.
And stick to
I
the
think,
path.
Yeah, that's the word. I think honesty with oneself and the ability to be sincere. You know, Shraddha is supposed to be the most important aspect for learning itself.
Shraddha, and as you rightly again said, humility. Because as we might be on any path, every path will have its own stumbling blocks, every path will have its own advantages, but it is actually humility and honesty that help us to learn and tread faster on the path. You know, talking about faith and experience, I remember a personal experience. I might have narrated this before, but I'll narrate it in brief.
Okay.
I had this doubt in my undergraduate years as to what comes first, and I really felt that if Swami were to give a fantastic experience, I mean, I had heard of people whose cancer had got cured in mind-boggling ways when the doctor has said that nothing can help them, and different such introductory miracles. So I felt that if anybody gets such a miracle in their life, naturally they'll believe in God. Then the question came is, why is God partial to some? Why can't he give this kind of miracle to everybody? So that everybody becomes... So this was the thing that was going on. At the same time, you know, there was one weak voice that was saying that, you know, just have faith in Swami and you will get that experience sometime. So that is when the same thing came up, whether faith comes first or experience comes first. I remember I was working in the audiovisual department, so I was keeping the mics and rolling the wires and keeping them safe till the next day. I just happened to see a thin little book lying down there. Believe me, after that day I have not been able to locate this book anywhere, online or even anywhere. It was something like Len Chibbe, L-E-N-C-H-I-B-B-E-Y. And his dreams of God. I don't know the title of the book, but it was all about an imaginary character called Len and his dreams of God. It was a fictional piece of work.
Okay.
So I just opened a page and there is Len speaking to God. And Len asks, God, you know, if you do a fantastic miracle, the whole world will believe you. So why don't you do a terrific miracle? Don't you want the whole world to believe in you? I said, oh my God, this is exactly the question that I was asking. So I felt so thrilled and I continued to read. And then God says, yes, Len, that is amazing. That is what I would like. So what do you want me to do then? He says, do a big miracle. A miracle so big that the whole world will notice. What do you want me to do? Tell me. You tell that miracle, I'll do it. He says, for instance, tomorrow morning when we wake up and as the sun rises, let the sky and the oceans not be blue anymore. Let them be some shade of red or pink or something like that, purple maybe, something different. And God says, Len, you know, that will not work. So Len says, why? He says, sometime back, this is what I thought I'll do. And because of that, I made the whole sky and ocean blue. But today, you have got explanations as to why it is blue and you never credit me. Why every day, every moment I'm actually painting the sky different hues, different colors. I'm trying to attract your attention. I make it purple, I make it red, I make it blue, I make it yellow. So many things I do. But you go on giving rationale for it and find some logical explanation. And you know what? When I really confound you with something that you can't explain, you just leave it saying that it's an unexplained scientific fact. It's an unexplained phenomena which you will find a reason for. This is, I'm flabbergasted. I just don't know what to do. So Len is now thoughtful. He says, oh yeah, that's right. And God says, Len, at the same time, you know, there is, for example, a person who is dying because he's unable to take a breath. On the other hand, you're simply breathing. You're not even conscious that you're breathing. Do you know your heart, how it's beating? Do you know your muscles, how they're working? Don't you realize that every moment that you're alive is actually a miracle? Because there's no logical explanation. Why for one person it's not happening? Why for the other person it's happening? It's just happening because of a miracle. And Len then gets amazed and God then tells him, see Len, when you have faith in God, every moment of your life becomes an experience. The very fact that you're alive is a miracle for you. But when you don't have faith in God, even when a physically grand miracle is done, it is an unexplained scientific fact, it is a coincidence, it is some bizarre occurrence, anything other than a miracle. So, for a mind without faith, nothing is going to impress. You will miss all the miracles in life. But when you have faith, everything in life becomes a miracle. And when I read this, now here again, Prem, I was left with two choices. I could have called this, you know, coincidence. Interesting episode. Or I can term this as a miracle. Because I had faith that my Swami always answers me, he never allows my heart to flutter and die in the pangs of doubt. I was convinced beyond doubt that this is Swami's little miracle which he arranged. Because after that day, as I said, Prem, I have never come across this book. I didn't find it there in that room, nor have I found it. Because I want to purchase this book if possible. Never found it. So, it becomes like totally now finally left to me. I can either make it a coincidence or I can make this a miracle. If I have faith, then it becomes a miracle. But otherwise, this superb, beautifully orchestrated experience just becomes another coincidence.
Right. I think, more than anything else, the reason why this question comes is something from what Swami himself tells. You know, oftentimes Swami would say that my miracles are my visiting cards. Like, you know, where he says that I introduce myself through a miracle, through an experience which is, you know, inexplicable. So you often think that it is required for you to have that faith. Because after all, Swami says that I give it for that very purpose. I think so it will be helpful, you know, before we start going into, you know, what is the, I mean, how faith comes before experience and how does it differ from our worldly experiences where we said that always we have faith on a person based on the experience we have with that person. I think it will be useful to see what are the different reasons for which Swami actually gives an experience in a person's life. It might not necessarily mean only for one particular purpose.
Exactly. And dear listeners, when we try to list out the different reasons why Swami grants an experience, we must confess with all humility that this is in no way a comprehensive
list. Definitely not comprehensive, right.
This is just what we think is possibly comprehensive. And even as we say, we know that we think that it is comprehensive only because of our own limitations. Because how can we fathom the reasons of the one who is beyond reason? So anyway, for the sake of our discussion, yes, as you said, one of the reasons why Swami grants an experience possibly is as a visiting card. You know, I remember yesterday you were narrating the experience of James Sinclair.
Right. Means that's phenomenal in the sense, you know, where he says that at one particular point when he's doing really badly in his business, he's a very successful entrepreneur at the age of, you know, in his mid-20s, he's already hit the million mark and he's really cruising in his career.
Mm-hmm.
When suddenly something goes wrong and he's in his apartment in New York, when everything seems to be shutting down, when he just breaks down, he sits down and he starts praying to Jesus. He says, God, if you really are, you know, this is the moment I need you. Wherever you are, I need you right now. And imagine, bang, in front of him, Swami just appears in that apartment in New York.
Oh,
Swami
God
appears. I mean, he doesn't know Swami. He's never seen an image of Swami before. And he's not somebody who's even, vaguely recognizable for him.
Hmm.
He's praying to Jesus Christ like he's always prayed. But, you know, in that moment of crisis, though he has always prayed to Jesus Christ, in that moment of crisis, he says, if you're really there, I want to see you now. You know, it's more of a reassurance of what he has always believed in. But he says, if you're really there, I need to see you now. And Swami appears and Swami says, I'm there, don't worry, I'll take care of you. Then he says, after that, he actually goes out in search of an image which is similar to what he saw in his dining room, in his living room, where he finally goes and finds a book where it is. You know, he sees a picture of Swami. That's how he comes to Swami. So clearly, it's definitely nothing other than an introductory miracle where Swami says that, yeah, I am divine, I am here. And I've just come to, you know, show you that.
But you know, Prem, when we meet or when we get introduced to some people, it's not that to everybody we hand out visiting cards, right? Even in our day-to-day experience, to some we just speak and maybe we exchange our email IDs or maybe we mm-hmm. exchange phone numbers. To some we give visiting cards, and there is possibly our human rationale behind why we give visiting cards to few, and we just, you know, don't give visiting cards to few. So definitely there will be some divine rationale why these visiting cards, which Swami calls his miracles, miracles are his visiting cards, is given to a few, and it's not given to few others. I mean, in the sense of an introductory miracle. If we take the case of that lady I spoke about when she came here, she might come here and she experiences something, she is convinced that she finds God, and possibly she has a dream that night, or I don't know, she might get an experience which is actually not necessary for her to believe that she has found her Lord, but it feels good nevertheless. You know, it's almost like your faith has been redeemed. You had faith and your faith is being rewarded. These are possibly what we can term as reassuring miracles. It makes you feel very special when it happens to you. I remember, it is not as if I didn't have faith in Swami. Swami is my God. And it was again in Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting there and I remember writing a letter. And I wrote the letter. You know, usually when we write letter, we give gratitude for something or we ask Swami for something. That day I was totally blank. I did not know what to write. At the same time, I wanted to write the letter because I would feel very nice when Swami takes the letter from my hand. It feels awesome. I have nothing to write, but I don't mind getting another experience where he takes it from my hand. And so since this was the only thought in my head, I remember writing that itself as a letter. I wrote, "Dear Swami," I don't know the exact words, but it went something like, "Swami, you know, I feel such great joy when I give you a letter. And when you take the letter from my hand, it's unbelievable joy. It is in order to experience this unbelievable joy that I am writing this letter to you, that's all. Dear loving student Arvind," whatever, I signed it and I was sitting. And that day, Swami came for darshan and he was walking. I was sitting along the central aisle through which Swami definitely passes by every day. In Vrindavan, the seating is different. It's not like Prashantilyam. So as Swami passed by me, he didn't take my letter. And yes, I felt, I cannot say I felt disappointed or dejected. I just felt, okay, fine, he didn't take the letter, that's all. And Swami walks down the entire central aisle, then turns and moves to the gent's side aisle. There are three aisles, the lady side aisle, the gent side aisle and the central aisle. Swami is walking in the gent side aisle and from there usually he goes to the steps, climbs up onto the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But as he comes near the area where I am seated, he suddenly stops, takes a detour, makes a cut and walks straight towards me. And I'm wondering what's happening, and it is a good 10 to 15 meters. And he walks straight to me, looks at me and asks me for the letter, picks it and walks straight to the stage, sits on the stage and only my letter in his hand as he is putting talam for the bhajans. And my joy was unbelievable. Because usually, you know, I was thinking when Swami takes the letter, it is this. Now this I felt like what possibly Dhruva might have felt when Lord Narayana came for him, you know. I was convinced that Swami walked all the way only to take my letter because he didn't look at anybody that time. He didn't speak to anybody else. He didn't create vibhuti for anybody else. He didn't take letter from anybody else. And that is when I realized what I had written in the letter. I had written, "Swami, I am writing this letter in order to experience unbelievable joy that I get when you take it from me." And Swami's actions were such that it actually, as I said, made my unbelievable joy even more unbelievable. I never thought that Swami would do this because this is not even an emergency letter. It's not as if my mother is sick or as if I am having some emergency somewhere. Nothing like that. It's just a, in quotes, casual letter. But it was such a sweet experience. For me, it was a miracle. It was as if Swami was reading my mind even as I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And he fulfilled my desire in the best possible manner. So it was not a miracle that was necessary for me to have my faith in him, but it felt so reassuring and wonderful. And I feel this is another reason why God gives experiences, just to reassure, I mean, make you feel special when something unique and unbelievable happens.
And then the other thing about reassuring miracles is, you know it that Swami knows, you know it that Swami can do anything, but when it happens to you, it's a completely different feeling. You know, you in the back of your mind, you always, you know, that's why we're sitting here, that's why we're doing whatever we're doing, because we believe Swami is God. But that one personal experience, when it comes, it kind of thrills you to an extent, as you said, you know, it's indescribable. Even though it's a reassurance of something which you already knew. I remember, I think we might have narrated this before, one of my juniors, you know, one day he gets a call from his somebody back home in Kerala. Somebody calls him and he says that it's a mother of a classmate who studied with him maybe sometime when he was in mid-school. And he's not met that friend after that, and he's not met this family after that. Suddenly, you know, this lady is calling up in the hostel and he's so surprised to get a call from a long-lost friend's mother. And she says, you know, "I'm so-and-so's mother. Your friend is actually admitted in the hospital. He met with a very serious accident and he's been in coma for a week or so. And the doctors are trying and they're not able to do anything. And looks like he's not going to come out of this coma." So he says, "But why did you call me? How did you think of calling me?" She said, "No, I don't know. I just felt that I heard that you are in, you know, Prashantinilayam, in Swami's presence. So I just thought I'll call you and ask you to pray for him." Okay. And they're not even devotees of Swami. You know, it's like whatever works, you know, if any God is there to come and help us, we're going to try to reach out to them. You know, that's the sense in which she just called and she said, "Do whatever you can. If you can, pray to Swami. Let's see what we can do." So it happened to be a Shivratri day. So there's no way he's going to get the chance to go up to Swami and tell. And, you know, it's Swami generally also doesn't encourage people coming and talking to him during Shivratri days, you know.
Or during other festivals also.
Festival yeah. days, but Shivratri especially, Swami would say that because of the high energies and all that kind of things. So this boy said, no, Aunty, this is the scenario here, but I'll definitely try my best. So this boy writes a letter completely describing the whole thing and saying that this is the condition, Swami. And please save this friend of mine. It would be wonderful if he can be shifted to our hospital and if he can be treated. That's what he writes. And that day he gets to sit right in the front. And he's sitting there with the letter. And Swami calls him for the, you know, calls him from the dais. So this boy goes up. And he's handing the letter. You know, even as he's handing the letter, Swami takes the letter from him and says, the friend of yours has woken up from coma.
Oh.
Okay. And this boy, he didn't catch what exactly Swami was saying. He said, Swami, what are you saying? He said, no, that friend has woken up from the coma. He's saying, which friend? Because now when you're sitting in the mandir there's so many things running in your mind. He's completely forgotten what he's actually written about, and he's wondering whether Swami will call me, you know, whether I'll get to sit in front, you know, if the bhajan group comes, you'll have to move, and you know, all kinds of pressures when you're sitting there in front of Swami. So he's saying, Swami, what are you saying? And Swami gave a very irritated look, opened the letter which he had just handed over to Swami, and pointed to exactly the point where he had written about his friend, and he said, this friend, he's woken up from coma. And this guy was like, oh, I mean, that's the prayer I was giving in front of Swami, and Swami saying that he's fine. So, you know, he goes back, and after the session, he runs back to the hostel and calls up this friend. In exactly the time when Swami picked that letter from him, actually that boy had woken up from coma there. And you know, see, the idea of this boy giving a letter to Swami is based on his faith that Swami can do something. You know, he had the faith that Swami has the power to do anything, even though that friend was hundreds of miles away in Kerala in some hospital. But still, that experience of Swami showing that I know and I've actually done what you wanted me to do, that filled him with so much thrill that it's kind of a reassurance of what you already know. And you know
this experience, Prem, is like I feel another category which we had forgotten to categorize, where Swami hits two birds in one stone. You know, it was like a reassuring miracle for this boy here.
And an introductory
miracle. Miracle for those people.
Exactly. In fact, you know, that boy goes on to say that after that he goes and meets one of the senior doctors in the hospital. He explains the whole case. And the doctor says, if he can be transported, we'll take care of him. So that was conveyed to them. And they were quite skeptical, you know, because he had just come out of coma. How can you make him travel for so many hours? But this boy explained to the doctors, he in fact spoke to some of the senior doctors in that hospital and said that this is the thing. So when they got to know that this is a free hospital which is giving super specialty treatment, they were shocked. Imagine Kerala is just almost the neighboring state. They had never heard of something like this. They said it's impossible. You know, this family is spending thousands of rupees every day here. Don't tell us that. And he said, after that, a team of about 7 or 8 doctors accompanied that boy just to see the hospital. So it was a miracle for them, you know, for them, somebody running a free medical care which gave tertiary care free was a miracle for those doctors. And this boy waking up like this from the coma was a miracle for the family, because the boy said that 13-14 members of the family came after this incident and they still come. They've become part of the Sevadal. So I think it's more than two birds at the throw of one stone.
I forget the name, but I remember we had carried a story about a blood cancer patient, a boy from who's currently settled in England.
Roshan, is it?
Roshan, yes.
Roshan, right.
Roshan. And Roshan Tora. In the article we had even the blood reports of how he had blood cancer, leukemia, and how he was cured later on. You know, about 3 weeks back, his mother came here and she met me.
Okay.
And she was sharing another interesting experience where she said that the doctor of Roshan in UK is now a complete devotee of Swami. It is, you know, as he said, it's like more than one bird in a stone. It is not as if she has had a personal experience with Swami, but seeing the way Roshan healed, she is convinced that it couldn't have been done without divine power, and therefore Swami is God. So this comes to that category where we get our faith basing it on others' experience.
Right. I think that's exactly as you said. In fact, one miracle which Swami does, or one experience which Swami does, that can also have multiple effects on different people. But of course, the point which you are making here is that reassuring miracle, and when it happens to you, it's completely different. You know, you might be a devotee for so many years, and I've noticed this with people, that first experience might come after 3 decades, but that first experience is still so thrilling when you actually know that Swami is beside you, you know.
And the next category that comes, Prem, is, you know, to remove doubts. This doubt is a kind of an infection that we have to constantly battle against. Because how much ever, we are convinced, Swami says, come, examine, experience, then have faith. That is the route that most of us follow. But after that, our faith we don't seem to hold on to. I mean, we know that Swami is capable of doing anything in the universe, and Swami loves us the most, so whatever Swami does is the best for us. And yet, those times come when we are in situations and we wonder, why God has put me in this situation? I feel that, this is not what I feel, I'm sure you'll also agree, that when we are convinced that Swami is the most loving, Swami is the most powerful, even to wonder as to why this is happening to me is like anti-faith. You're going against faith. It shows that either you don't believe that God is all-powerful, or you don't believe that He's all-loving. But His love is such that even when we get like these doubts, He's there to remove these doubts through, again, experiences or miracles which He gives. I remember a school teacher, Sairam sir, he was my physics teacher when studied in 11th grade. He still continues to teach in the higher secondary school. Mm-hmm. He was narrating how when he joined Vrindavan in 1989, he was selected as a chai boy. Recently, if you remember, we carried an article on Dr. Chai, a person who underwent mental trauma. He was in a mental asylum and Swami literally adopted him. And it's a fantastic story. So dear listeners, if you have missed it, it is a cover story that was carried on the 9th of December, the death anniversary of Dr. Chai Ko Seng. So definitely read it. It's a fantastic tale of Swami's love. And so Sairam sir was a chai boy. And he had to take care of, chai boys were the students who would take care of Dr. Chai. Mm. And he was saying that when he joined as a chai boy, that was the time when Dr. Chai had tuberculosis.
Okay.
And tuberculosis is very contagious. And he got scared that he might contract this disease from him. His seniors, in fact, warned him and said, you know, be a little careful, don't go too close to him because he has got tuberculosis. But then Sairam sir thought, my seniors themselves are going so close to him. How come they have fear that they will contract tuberculosis? So he told them. So in the beginning, he didn't feel much fear because he felt that there are so many in the same boat.
Right.
One day when he told them that, you also stand the equal chance of getting tuberculosis, they said, no, we won't get tuberculosis. You asked why? They said, you know, when Chai got tuberculosis, this was before Sairam sir had joined, They said, Swami came, patted us on our head and said, you don't worry, nothing will happen to you. So see, nothing can happen to us because Swami has told us. So it's like, you know, you are on your own, buddy. Now Sairam sir,
you've not yet got the vaccination.
Yeah, you're not insulated against this. So this made Sairam sir very worried. He felt that, oh my God, now everybody is protected. I thought that we are all in the same boat. They are in a very safe ship. I am in the lifeboat here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'll drown. So he says that year, during Guru Purnima, as it always happens, Vrindavan boys come to Prashantanilayam for the festival. And Guru Purnima time, he was seated outside the bhajan hall. And bhajans were going on. And as bhajans were going on, again this fear started coming in him. He started thinking that, you know, I better write a letter to Swami and tell him that, Swami, you have to protect me against tuberculosis because I'm taking care of Chai and I may contract tuberculosis. Even as he got this thought and wanted to write it down as a letter, which he could offer to Swami in any of the next 2-3 days possibly, he says Swami started walking through the bhajan hall and exited from the back door near which he was seated. And he says Swami came walking straight to him, stood right in front of him, patted him thrice on his head. Okay, if he had patted the other boys once, he had patted him thrice. Mm-hmm. And then just looked at him without him saying anything. Swami directly said, don't worry, nothing will happen. And then turned and walked away. And Sairam sir says that I was just bold. You know, I never had any doubts about Swami being divine. But this experience of Swami's omniscience, it solved a nagging doubt in my heart because I felt that I'm going to contract a deadly disease. And it also thrilled. Again, it's like Swami striking two things in the same bird. Mm-hmm. Here, Swami not only removed the doubts that Sairam sir had, he also reassured him and made him feel very, very special. So, as is a third reason possibly why Swami does these miracles is to ensure that whenever doubt comes and hits, that doubt is removed.
Right. So I think just going back, we said as an introductory miracle, which is usually what Swami says, giving visiting cards. The second one, of course, is reassuring. The third one is when doubt is removed just for the sake of, you know, so that it doesn't hamper your faith in otherwises. And the fourth one is, you know, we actually did speak about it in the process where we said just to give happiness. Because Swami would say, I mean, I just want to make you happy. That's all. That is nothing more than that. And many times it's like that, you know, there is no meaning for, or there is, in the sense that it's not always a do or die situation. It's not always miracles happen only when you're about to die and a miracle is performed and you're saved and you're about to succumb to a disease and Swami comes and cures it. Sometimes it's absolutely just for the thrill of that moment. And I think when you read some of the Chitravati sessions and some of the experiences there, it's just for the fun of it, you know, nothing more than that. It's just to give you that joy.
And you used to, you know, Swami used to say that poem, Ananda Balude.
Right.
Where
you know,
he says that, I've just come to play.
I've just come to play. I mean, I've come to play with my group. That's what he says. Tanu gumputo adukonu vache. To have fun with my group, I've come. It's literally like that. And I think even in the earlier days of the university, I mean, in the erstwhile Arts and Science College in Vrindavan, the kind of some things which Swami used to do was just for the fun of it. You know, you might think that, as we said, there might be few in the group whose faith was being built in the process, but for some others it was just for the fun of it, you know, just to have that thrill of being in the presence of God.
That's a very nice point that you made, Prem. You know, when you say that sometimes God does miracles just to give happiness, just for the fun of it. Because, you know, as students we have seen Swami made, you know, let's come to a very, you know, a very physical kind of miracle where Swami waves his hand and materializes a chain or a ring. This example can satisfy all, you know, like it can be an introductory miracle. At the same time, you know, it's a kind of reassuring miracle in the sense that you know Swami can create a ring or a chain, but when it happens to you, it feels very, very special. You might have seen Swami creating 100 rings, 100 chains or vibhuti on 100 occasions, but when he creates it for you, it's an unbelievable feeling. It's so thrilling, so beautiful. At the same time, you know, every time I used to wonder, why is it that Swami gives chain to somebody? Why is it he gives ring to somebody? And we come up with various reasons. And I remember in our satsang also, we have spoken so many reasons as to why Swami gives. I'm saying this because recently, 2-3 boys whom I have felt that Swami blessed them in bounty when it comes to rings and chains, they revealed to me how, you know, their life had been. And then you get to know the whole story and you feel, oh my God, you know, they definitely needed it. While this is one kind of case, I'm saying that there are some cases, even to this day, they themselves say, I don't know why Swami gave the chain. I mean, they were not in any kind of emergency, they were not in any kind of dire situation, as you said, and nothing. I mean, it's not as if they had some shaky faith and they needed an object of faith to reinforce. Nothing. And you would see that happening, right? In front of your eyes, you see somebody simply being showered with love without having any problems also. So, such kinds, I think, we can only classify under this fourth category where you say it's just to give joy.
You know, the peril of being judgmental, I'll tell you one incident about that. Generally, when we say, you know, that so-and-so, as you said, either a person gets a ring or a chain because he needs it, he's going to go through a bad period, or he needs to, his faith is shaky and he needs to be, reinforced. I remember one of my classmates, he had come as part of a youth group before he joined the university. He used to come with a lot of freshers, bring them to Swami, people who were in his college and all that. And because he was in a good, you know, Swami knew him well and Swami knew that he's coming with group of youth, Swami used to call him for interviews. So these boys, you know, he would ensure that whenever they come to Prashant Nilayam, they all are centered around Swami. They would, you know, he would ensure that some elders come and speak to them or he would speak to them. He would encourage them to ask questions and he would talk to them and all that. So in one of the sessions in the sheds when they were staying, one of the youngsters got up and asked, he said, brother, why does Swami give rings and chains? So this boy, he said, you know, if your faith is not strong, Swami will give you a ring or chain or, you know, so that your faith becomes strong.
Hmm.
So immediately all the boys look at his hand. Because he is a senior person and he's been coming for so many years, and they found that he didn't have any ring or chain. So they're very happy, okay. Then the person who was leading our group is somebody who was of strong faith. And this boy also, I think, would have told it with that confidence, because Swami had not given him anything. So he said, see, when your faith is not very strong, Swami might give you something like that, so that your faith is established. And the next day, Swami calls this group for an interview. And Swami is talking to them. Suddenly Swami calls this very boy, you know, the senior boy, this classmate of mine, and Swami materializes the ring and gives it to him. In the moment Swami materializes the ring, everybody in that group is staring at this guy. So now we know who is lacking faith. And this boy, he's saying, no Swami, I don't want it, I don't want it. You know, imagine Swami is giving you a ring and you're saying that I don't want it. And Swami is saying, hey, shut up and take it now. And pulled his hand and put it. So, I mean, it comes out of the idea that you think that this is the only reason for which Swami does, you know, something like this. So Swami gives an experience. As we said, we have listed down 4 or 5, but it's far from being comprehensive.
I think, Prem, that this is a good point. This is a good point in time where we can play that clip from Bhagwan's discourse. I believe it was from the Guru Purnima of 1992.
Right.
The 12th of July.
14th of July.
And Swami very powerfully speaks on how faith should be. I think we can play that discourse clip first and then take this discussion further on.
గాఢముగా చేరినటువంటి యొక్క భావములు,
ద ఫీలింగ్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ సో డీప్,
ఎలాంటి పరిస్థితుల్లో కూడా సుక్ష్మంగానే ఉంటాయి.
అండర్ ఎనీ సర్కమ్స్టాన్సెస్ దట్ సే
గాఢముగా చేరినటువంటి యొక్క భక్తులు,
ద డివోటీస్ హూ డోంట్
హావ్ ఎప్పుడూ అశాంతిగానే ఉంటారు.
దే ఆర్ ఆల్వేస్ రెస్ట్లెస్.
ఒక చిన్న ఉదాహరణము,
ఎ స్మాల్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్.
రోడ్డు ప్రక్కలోపల
on along side of the road
పెద్ద వృక్షాలంతా ఉంటాయి.
దే ఆర్ హ్యూజ్ ట్రీస్.
కానీ ఈ వృక్షాలు చూస్తే చాలా పెద్దగా ఉంటున్నాయి.
వెన్ యూ లుక్ ఎట్ దెమ్ దే ఆర్ జైజాంటిక్.
కానీ క్షామం ఏర్పడింది.
బట్ దెర్ వాజ్ ఫేమిన్.
వర్షము లేదు.
నో రెయిన్.
నీరు లేదు.
నో వాటర్.
కానీ ఆ వృక్షములు పచ్చగానే ఉంటున్నాయి.
బట్ దోస్ ట్రీస్ ఆర్ గ్రీన్.
దానికి ప్రక్కనే
ఆన్ వన్ సైడ్
ఒక వరి పంట ఉంటుండాలి.
ప్యాడీ ఫీల్డ్.
దానికి నిత్యము నీరు పెట్టాలి.
ద ప్యాడీ ఫీల్డ్ హ్యాస్ టు బి వాటర్డ్.
ఒక దినమేమైనా నీరు పెట్టకపోతే అది వాడిపోతుంది, ఎండిపోతుంది.
ఇఫ్ యూ డోంట్ వాటర్ ప్యాడీ ఫీల్డ్ ఫర్ వన్ డే, ఇట్ వుడ్ బి డ్రై.
ఈ తెలివి తక్కువ మనిషి ఏమనుకుంటాడు?
హూ ఇస్ ఫూలిష్ వన్?
వరి ఇంత చిన్న ముక్క ఒక దినం నీళ్లు కట్టకపోతే వాడికి ఎండి చచ్చిపోతుండాలి.
సచ్ లిటిల్ వన్ ద ప్యాడీ.
ఇంత పెద్ద వృక్షము ఇంతకాలం వర్షం లేకపోయినా అది పచ్చగా కలకలలాడుతుంటారు.
ఏ బిగ్ ట్రీ ఈవెన్ ఇఫ్ యు డోంట్ వాటర్ ఇట్ స్టిల్ రిమైన్స్ గ్రీన్.
కారణం ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ఈస్ ద రీజన్?
అనగా ఆ పెద్ద చెట్టు యొక్క వేర్లు నీటి మట్టం వరకు దిగిపోయినాయి.
మీనింగ్ ద రూట్స్ ఆఫ్ ద హ్యూజ్ ట్రీ హస్ గాన్ ఇన్ టు ద డెప్త్స్ ఆఫ్ ది వాటర్ లెవెల్.
కనుకనే ఆ లోపల నుంచి ఆ నీరు సప్లై చేస్తుండాలి వేర్ల ద్వారా ఈ చెట్టుకు.
దేర్ఫోర్ ద రూట్స్ హావింగ్ గాన్ ఇన్ టు ద డెప్త్స్ కుడ్ టేక్ వాటర్.
ప్రక్కన ఉన్నటువంటి వరి పైరు నీటి మట్టం వరకు దిగలేదు.
బట్ ద రూట్స్ ఆఫ్ ది ప్యాడీ ఫీల్డ్ హావ్ నాట్ గాన్ దట్
డీప్. పైపైనే ఉంటున్నాయి. పైపై నీరున్నంత వరకు పచ్చగా ఉంటుంది. పైపై నీరు పోతేనే ఎండిపోతుంది.
రూట్స్ ఆఫ్ ది ప్యాడీ ఫీల్డ్ ఆర్ జస్ట్ సూపర్ఫిషియల్, రిసీవ్ ది వాటర్ దేర్ ఓన్లీ దెన్ బికమ్స్ డ్రై.
కాబట్టి అన్ని విధములా కూడాను మనము అశాంతికి దుఃఖములకు గురి కావటం కారణం ఏమిటి?
సో వాట్ ఇస్ ది రీజన్ ఫర్ అవర్ మిస్?
మన భావమును ఆ యొక్క గ్రేస్, ప్రేమ, ఆనందము అనేటువంటి తత్వం యొక్క లోతు వరకు దిగటం లేదు.
బికాస్ అవర్ రూట్స్ ఆఫ్ ఫెయిత్ హావ్ నాట్ రీచ్డ్ ద డెప్త్స్ ఆఫ్ డివోషన్ అండ్ ఫెయిత్.
కేవలం పైపై నీటిలోనే మనం ప్రయాణం చేస్తున్నాం.
వి జస్ట్ ట్రావెల్ సూపర్ఫిషియల్.
అంతా మనం ఫ్లయింగ్ సాసెస్ మాదిరి తయారైపోయినాం.
వి హావ్ బికమ్ ఫ్లయింగ్ సాసెస్.
కానీ ఇట్టి దాంట్లో మనం ఏమాత్రం కూడా మనం తగినటువంటి యొక్క తత్వాన్ని మనం గుర్తించుకోలేము.
వీ హావ్ వీ డోంట్ అండర్స్టాండ్ ద ట్రూ నేచర్.
ఆ నమ్మకం మన కుదరాలి.
వీ షుడ్ హావ్ దట్ స్టడీ ఫెయిత్.
ఆ విశ్వాసమే మన నిజమైన శ్వాస.
దట్ స్ట్రాంగ్ ఫెయిత్ ఇస్ ద బ్రెత్.
కానీ ఆ శ్వాస మనకు మధ్య మధ్య మారుతూ ఉంటుంది చేతనే,
యాజ్ ద బ్రెత్ చేంజెస్ ఇన్ బిట్వీన్,
వ్యక్తిగతమైనటువంటి యొక్క అభిప్రాయ భేదముల చేతనే,
బికాస్ ఆఫ్ ది ఇండివిజువల్ ఒపీనియన్,
మానవుడు అనేక విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క దుఃఖములకు, విచారములకు, అసంతృప్తికి గురి అవుతున్నాం.
వి ఫేస్ వేరియస్ ఫార్మ్స్ ఆఫ్ డిఫికల్టీస్ అండ్ డిసాటిస్ఫాక్షన్.
మనం వింటున్నాం ఎన్నో మాటలు.
వి లిసన్ సో మెనీ వర్డ్స్.
స్వామి మాటలు నిత్యము వింటూనే ఉంటున్నాం.
వి లిసన్ టు స్వామిస్ వర్డ్స్.
కానీ కొంతమంది ఒక్కతూరి వింటే చాలు, అది లైఫ్ అంతా పెట్టుకుని దాన్ని ఆచరణలో పెట్టుకుంటారు.
బట్ సమ్ ఇఫ్ దే లిసన్ వన్స్, దే ప్రాక్టీస్ త్రూఅవుట్ దేర్ లైఫ్.
ఇంత ఉపన్యాసం చేసినటువంటి యొక్క అనిల్ కుమార్ కూడాను,
అనిల్ కుమార్ హ్యాడ్ గివెన్ సచ్ ఎ లాంగ్ లెక్చర్
ఇక్కడ ఇండియాలో, బెంగళూరులో, గుంటూరులో ఉన్నంత వరకు మంచిగా ఉపన్యాసాలు ఇస్తాడు.
So long he is in India, Bangalore and Guntur, he was giving lectures.
Kani upanyasu chala kalaga, kanchaga, akarshaniyanga, sobhayamananga untunnadi kani.
Though the lecture is attractive and informative.
Madhya madhya ee monkey mind bamsu jamsu bamsu jamsu.
But his monkey mind has got bumps and gems.
ఒక్కొక్కరు తానే చెప్తాడు.
He himself says at one time.
ఇది నిజమా అని డౌట్ పడతాడు.
But he doubts, is it true?
ఈ డౌట్ ను పరిహారం గావించుకునే నిమిత్తమై నేను టోక్యోకి పంపించాను.
To clarify his doubts, I have sent him to Tokyo.
అక్కడ పోయి వారి భక్తి ప్రపత్తులంతా కండ్లారా చూచాడు.
He has seen himself the devotion of those people.
దీనికంతా మూల కారణము మన విశ్వాసమే అని దృఢంగా తెలుసుకున్నాడు.
He could understand that the faith which is responsible for the foundation.
కనుక ఎక్కడైనప్పటికీ సరే,
wherever it may be,
విశ్వాసం అనేటువంటిది ఎప్పటికీ ఫెయిల్యూర్ కాదు.
The faith will never lead you to failure.
You know, Prem, two things that strike so strongly. First thing is when Swami says that is the reason I sent Professor Anil Kumar to Tokyo. It reminded me of how, Lord Krishna tells Uddhava, go and tell the Gopikas that,
right.
Go and console them. Uddhava thinks that he is actually carrying the Lord's message to the Gopikas, but it becomes a very learning experience when he meets the Gopikas. And Professor Anil Kumar confesses that is what happened to him in Tokyo. And I think as members working at Radio Sai, it is of special importance for us to remember that when we have got this chance to share, when we are thinking that we are sharing Swami's love with the whole world, it is actually an opportunity for us to learn how one should love God, how one should have faith in God.
Very true. Many times you have noticed it. No? We say some things as part of our program here, as part of our discussion, we might share some thoughts. But when people come and say how deeply it has impacted them and how, how well they have received it and implanted it in their lives, it really is humbling.
Exactly.
It has come out of our mouths, but we really don't know how much we are following it ourselves. But as, I think the case with Anil Kumar sir is this case with all of us. I'm reminded of what happened with the Professor Kasturi too, something very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Swami is giving a discourse, was scheduled to give a discourse in an open arena, where people are sitting in the open space, and a stage was erected for Swami. And that day, it was a very cloudy and overcast day. So even as that session was in progress, they could see thick rain clouds coming towards that place where this open gathering was happening. So Professor Kasturi spoke before Swami, and he said, I know that the clouds are coming and you all are scared. What happens? What will happen if there's a downpour here? But don't worry, Swami is here and he's the master of all the elements, and nothing can touch this gathering which is being presided over by him. No rain can come and disturb this gathering. So after that, Swami gave a discourse, and Swami was, in the course of that discourse, Swami was, I think, speaking about faith, and Swami said, see, Professor Kasturi, before me he spoke, and he told you that don't worry, the clouds will not come. But sitting behind me now, all the time he's praying, Swami, the rain should not come, what will they think of me now? And he said, see, though he encouraged you to have faith, he himself does not have the faith that definitely there will not be any rain.
And this aspect was highlighted so beautifully by Swami with an analogy, where he says that the paddy crop requires daily watering, and the trees that grow on the roadside, they weather through many droughts and still are lush green and they yield fruits. I think we can possibly consider rains to be showers of grace or experiences that God gifts to us. If we are, of the opinion, or if we feel that it is experience that nourishes faith, then we will be like that paddy crop. One year there is no rain and we wither and die away. I feel it is faith that gives us experiences, and that is what makes us like those gigantic trees growing by the roadside. When our faith is so deep rooted that we are convinced that it may not rain this year, it may not rain next year, but when I need it, I will be supplied with enough. And even inside Prashanthinilayam, when we see there are some trees that are more than 50 to 60 years old, that are as old as Prashanthinilayam itself, if not older. So it is really very inspiring and a very beautiful analogy where Swami shows the results of the two approaches. If you use the approach that it is experience alone that gives faith, and it is based on experiences that we develop faith, then your faith will last as long as the experience lasts. Once the experience goes, your faith also goes. But if you are just deep-rooted in faith, then whenever the experience is supposed to come, it will come. And even if it doesn't come, you don't collapse. You hold on. I think that's a very, very, very powerful pointer that Bhagwan gives during this discourse.
Reminded of what a very old devotee, Ranima, she had shared when we had interviewed her.
Mm.
That series is still there. I think it's one of the most enlightening series we've had from an old devotee. She speaks of an experience which they have. You know, they've come all the way from Delhi in the 1940s. And you can imagine, to come from Bangalore, it used to take 24 hours. To come from Delhi, and they come from a very, very family which is quite well off. I think one of her sister's husbands were in the government as a bureaucrat then. So you can imagine, it's Lutyens Delhi they come from. It's the most well-off part of the capital of the country. And from there to Puttaparthi, even that journey itself means that there is some kind of inner calling. You won't come here all the way just to satisfy your skeptical doubts. There's some inner calling which they've come here for, and they stayed here for quite some time in the very, very Spartan conditions here. But after that, you know, they always had these doubts waging through their minds, even as they were sitting in front of Swami, even as they were enjoying Swami's presence. So one day this Ranima was there with her sister in one of the rooms, all by themselves, they're unpacking something, when suddenly Swami walks in and starts talking to them. And then Swami kind of throws them off their feet by saying, "I know that it is very difficult for you to accept that I am God." So they were like, you know, they didn't know what to say. They knew that Swami had actually picked up some thought which was right
inside their head
and which they had tried to be silent about. So they did not say anything. You know, they just said a yes through their silence. And Swami said, "I know that you are having this doubt." But the next thing which Swami said, "But it's natural. You know, to have a doubt like this is quite natural. You know, somebody who is just like you comes and tells that I am God. How can you have faith?" You know, in that one sentence, Swami kind of unburdened them so much. Like, till then, no, you're like one step in forward, one step in front, one step back, and you're feeling so guilty that you're smiling in front of Swami, you're taking Pad Namaskar, but at the same time you're having this doubt. But when Swami said, "This is a very natural thing, you don't have to feel bad about it," it kind of released so much of pressure from within. But then Swami said, "But then you'll have to test me." You know, you have to test whether I'm really God, and then accept or don't accept according to your need. So Swami said, "How will you test me?" Swami said, "When you go back home, you test my omnipresence. Because omnipresence is only, you know, can be exhibited only by God. See, omniscience can be exhibited by others, but omnipresence can be exhibited only by God. A guru can show you omniscience. He can read your thoughts.
He can read your thoughts.
But omnipresence is always exhibited only by God." So Swami said, "When you go back, you test my omnipresence." Okay? And she was very happy to hear this from Swami. And Swami said that once you test and once you've confirmed your faith, hold on to that.
You know, that is a, you know, apart from being a fantastic and beautiful experience story, I feel the message
is... It's not yet complete. Of course, you can make your remarks.
Okay. Please continue.
Yeah, the fact is, as you said, only the stories which have a good conclusion tend to get our attention. But this is definitely one such story. But it's also a very learning experience. That's why I choose to narrate it here. You know, she goes back to Delhi and she forgets about this whole episode of Swami telling her this and all that. And at one particular point, her husband is a doctor. So he's the one who takes care of all the health issues in the family. And at one point when he's on tour, he's not at home, her son falls sick. So he starts getting temperatures of something like 105, 106.
Oh my God.
And she doesn't know what to do. She calls a friend of her husband who comes and checks and he says it could be malaria. A day later, malaria is ruled out and he says it could be influenza. 2 days later, influenza is ruled out. But this boy has been in that fever for 4 days. So finally he comes and says that let's test his blood. Maybe it's typhoid. Okay. And in the meanwhile, you can imagine 4 days of 103, 104 temperature. This boy starts getting delirious. You know, he's not able to recognize his own mother, 6 or 7 year old boy. And he suddenly gets out of his bed, starts running all over the place. He starts, talking gibberish. They don't know what's going on. So it's something like a brain fever which has set in. So she doesn't know what to do. She's very, very, you know, frantically trying to get some help. When suddenly, like, a voice from within, no? It tells her, this is the time for you to test my omnipresence.
Hmm.
Okay. And she says that it's not like Swami's voice or something, but it was like from nowhere the thought came. Now, this is the time for you to test Swami's omnipresence.
Hmm.
So immediately she calls one of the servants at home and says, you take care of the child. I want to go and pray.
Hmm.
So she goes to an altar room. She sits there and she says, Swami, today I want to test your omnipresence.
Hmm.
Today I want to test you.
Hmm.
Okay. And she says, I have three conditions. I'm placing three conditions in front of you. Now after I finish my prayer session, when I go back to my son's room, he should be fast asleep.
Hmm.
He should not be running all around the place or talking in his sleep. He should be fast asleep. He should be silently sleeping. And the second thing is, the next morning when I check his temperature, it should be 98.4. The normal temperature.
0.6.
Hmm. Okay, 98.6.
Hmm.
No, the normal human temperature. And she said, even 99 is unacceptable for me.
Hmm.
It should be that normal human temperature. That's the second condition. And then when I check it later in the evening, because usually the fever, you know, rises in the afternoon for this boy. So when I check him again in the evening, it should again be that same temperature.
Hmm.
So you fulfill these three conditions, then you have proved your omnipresence to me. Okay. So this lady goes back, and needless to say, the moment she enters the room, she sees that the son is, you know, fast asleep. So she asks the servant, you know, when did he fall asleep? He said, a few minutes after you left. So apparently when that prayer was made, the next moment this boy has fallen asleep. So she's very happy. The next morning she goes very expectantly into the child's room and checks his temperature, exactly 98.6. Okay, so she's, you know, even more thrilled. And again, she's waiting desperately for the evening to come. And by then this boy is almost like normal. He recognizes his mother, he stops talking nonsense, and, you know, he's moving about, he's eating his food. And again she checks in the evening, and it's 98.6. And she says, Swami, I don't need anything anymore.
Mm.
Now she kind of gives a word, Swami, I don't need to test you anymore. Now whatever happens, I know that you're giving me your proof. And even as this is happening, you know, much later she comes to know that when this episode was happening in her life, Swami was in Venkatagiri.
Hmm.
So one day, those people who were sitting outside Swami's room, they hear a bang on this inside the room.
Hmm.
It's like somebody has fallen down. So they all run into Swami's room, they find that Swami is lying on the floor.
Hmm.
Okay. And they go up to Swami and they realize that Swami has gone into a trance. So they wait for Swami to come back. So after Swami comes back, they go and ask him, Swami, what happened? Where did you go? And then Swami says that Ranima is there, no, from Delhi. No, her son was very sick. And she went into the prayer room and she said, Swami, come and prove your omnipresence today. So I had gone there to save the child. Now the child is fine. He's fine now. The temperature has come down to 98.6.
Wow.
And you know, there are so many facets in this one experience. One is, of course, you're allowed to test. And the other thing is, test, but don't keep testing.
You know, Prem, that was the reason why I interrupted you possibly, because even as you kept speaking, so many things started, you know, happening within me.
Mm-hmm.
And let me see how much I can gather and how well I can connect those. But one of the first things that hit me was, you know, this thing, this aspect of a guru or a mind reader can exhibit omniscience as to, you know, tell you what you are thinking. Tell you what you are thinking at that point in time, or tell you what's bothering you. But omnipresence, this is very, very, very useful possibly as an acid test, you know. See, for example, you know, you and me, we are convinced of Swami's divinity. Let's say a newcomer, he has just come, he has absolutely no idea of Swami's divinity. How do we tell him, just have faith? I feel this could be a good rule of the thumb, you know, to see, to not only omniscience, but also omnipresence and omnipotence. You know, whether Swami can give this experience to me, whether, because God has the capability to give the experience to each and every individual. So, as Swami told Ranima, in Delhi, in your home, yes, you test my omnipresence. So I feel this is a very, very nice rule of the thumb. I mean, if I say that if you have to experience Swami, you have to come only to Prashanthi Nilayam and bow at the Sai Sannidhi there to experience Swami, then it is possibly something to do with the place, something to do with the people here or something like that. Because if God is omnipresent, then You just need to have faith in Swami and He will give you the experience in your bedroom in London or in Timbuktu, wherever you are. You know, this is a point that really hit me and this is a learning for me from this satsang. I never thought that this would come up, but it's so fantastic that omnipresence, and it is very thrilling to note that Swami Himself has said. The other thing is, as you were narrating Rani Ma's experience, I was reminded of an experience that happened involving two people, myself and my cousin sister.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's a distant cousin and she actually believed in Swami.
Okay.
It was an unfortunate turn of events where her sister got married to a Sai student.
Mm-hmm.
And this Sai student actually was anti-Swami. It's amazing. A Sai student means, I mean, a person who has passed out from the portals of this university.
Okay.
And he actually destroyed the faith that cousin had.
Mm-hmm.
And she has now told this cousin sister whom I'm referring to, and she is also shaky. So this is what has happened in brief. And now on this side, Prem, what has happened is I am in second year MSc and I am undergoing my own kind of emotional churning.
Mm-hmm.
And I am feeling Swami is not responding to me and I am feeling very lonely, all alone in the world, and I feel nobody cares or anything like this. So this is my situation. Again, I am cutting down whole story into a very brief thing.
Okay.
Now when this has happened, the only pact that this sister of mine made with me was, I somehow suspected that, you know, she's no longer so enthusiastic about Swami. When she actually divulged, she said, you know, I have heard this. I'm shakier. I don't know if I actually believe Swami anymore. At that point in time, I don't know, Prem, what made me speak. I was sitting in her clinic and I told her, see, the next time, you know, when you're in the most difficult of situations, give Swami a chance. You will see that wherever you are in the world, He will come and He will respond to you. And after that, that's enough. That is your own experience, you can see. Just give Swami a chance. Don't do in any normal thing. Do it in a very, very difficult situation. You know, that is what I had told her. And somehow it was there in her mind. And apparently that tough situation had come at that point in time in life. And I just had to tell all these details in order to, show what a magnificent miracle it was. Because this was a time where I had totally got cut off from her because I'm here in the hostel. And she is somewhere else. She's in Bombay. And there was no connection. And even when, you know, you write letters or you make calls to home, you usually do it to your own parents. And that's it. You don't want to spend any more money on any other phone calls and all this. This is the situation in hostel.
Mm-hmm.
So that day when she received a terrible news about her own sister, and when she received that news, she was so shattered. She doesn't have a father. And she didn't know whom to tell this to. She was feeling heavily burdened in her heart. And she says at that point in time, her mother was also a patient. She didn't know whether her mother will have the courage to receive this news.
Mm-hmm.
She was very shaken. And she says at that time, she remembered the statement I had told her that in the toughest of situation, you give Swami a chance.
Okay.
And then she says, Swami, right now, I don't know if you're listening to what I'm speaking. I want to, you know, speak with you. But I don't think you will want to speak to me because, you know, I have not believed you. I don't know if I believe you. You know, it's a funny kind of situation. You're praying to somebody you don't believe in. So she says, the best thing I can think, the closest I can think of speaking to you is speaking with Arvind. So let this brother of mine call me. This is what she says.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I want him to call me now. And she opens her purse to take out her cell phone. Now, I pause the story here and I tell you my side. I am in a very, very emotionally drained state, as I said, and I'm feeling so lonely and I'm thinking Swami is not responding to me. And I decide to call my mother and cry out and seek support from her. And on this day, my mother is not picking the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whom to seek support from and I want support. So I'm thinking, whom should I call? And can you believe of all the people, this sister comes in my mind.
Okay.
So, I dial her number and the phone rings and rings and rings and rings and she doesn't pick up and I just keep the phone and I walk back and I tell, you know, I guess I'm meant to be all alone in this world and that I'm lost in my own depression.
Mm-hmm.
Now going back to the story in Mumbai, she opens her purse mm-hmm. to take out her cell phone mm-hmm. and she sees that on that day, she has forgotten her phone at home. And she says, oh my God, you know, this is the magic of faith. She feels that, you know, Arvind will be calling me and I'm not there to receive it. And she sees the time, it's somewhere around 3:30 in the afternoon, she says.
Mm-hmm.
So she decides that she'll shut her clinic and go home. She shuts her clinic and she goes home to pick up her cell phone, and she says at 3:30 p.m. there are 2 missed calls from Arvind, and she says, I broke down. And it was almost a week later she called me, and she, when she calls me, she asks me, why did you call me? And I, by that time I had recovered, and I was too embarrassed to say that, you know, I was feeling very lost and I didn't know whom to seek support from. I just said, no, I just called you, that's all, I don't know, no reason why I called you. Then she said, no, there's a reason why you called. That is this, you know, you had told. And you know, after that day, Prem, she's back to Swami. So this is another episode that I remembered when you said, you know, test out the omnipresence and see, because nothing as thumping as a personal experience.
Right. And another beautiful thing which Swami is told here and otherwise also, test it for yourself. But you know, once you test it, you hold on to what you have learnt, not the process. Like, you know, alright, you've asked for an experience which you cannot rationalize. You asked for something which cannot be reasoned out. And that has led you to, in most cases, the love that Swami bears for us. You know, most often you talk of miracles, when you talk of materializations, it was always inspired only by love. Mm. And the moment you actually recognize that love, you hold on to that love, now let that recognition of that love define the other events that you experience in life. Don't let those experiences to again feed your perception of that love. You know, most often what happens is, yeah, I've had this experience, like, you know, like, let me say that I've noticed this, or somebody is hearing this experience being narrated by you. It doesn't mean that if tomorrow I'm in a situation and I make the same prayer and I don't get that call, it doesn't mean that Swami does not love me. It just means that that love that Swami bears for me, He does not choose to express it in this means. That will happen when you have already fixed that. You know, this is a non-variable. This is a constant in my equation of life. That Swami loves me and Swami will care for me, and whatever Swami does will be good for me. So once that is fixed, now I will define everything else I experience in life based on that definition.
Exactly. When we speak of faith and experience, Prem, basing on what you have said, you know, it comes to, the confusion comes only because Swami Himself has said, come, test, you know, experience for yourself, then have faith. At the same time, you know, we heard Swami saying that faith is a must. Faith is the first, in fact, in another discourse, Swami says, faith is like the foundation. You can't see it, but it's absolutely necessary for the superstructure to exist. If there's no faith, no superstructure can be built. So, Swami has apparently spoken both ways. The analogy that comes to my mind is another analogy which Swami Himself has given, is like how we learn swimming. You know, if you want to learn swimming, you need to have faith and take that plunge. At the same time, you know, you can't take the plunge unless you know swimming, because you'll drown. So, which one comes first? Do you learn swimming and take a plunge? Or do you take a plunge to learn swimming? It's almost like that. And this is a nice analogy to relate to, because there are thousands of us, millions of us in this world who know swimming. And how did we learn swimming? It was a mixture of faith, where we decided, yes, we will take the plunge. At the same time, it was, you know, we have a coach possibly, or we have our father or our mother or our friend, somebody whom we trust, whom we have faith in, you know, that he definitely or she definitely knows this. We trust, and then, so it is a mix of faith in the person, faith in our own selves, but all said and done, that faith in our own selves is absolutely necessary to take this plunge. So I feel in life also, it is like in the beginning when you start off, it is like starting off a motor, where you try to find that equilibrium between a faith and an experience. But once the motor is running, once you have learned the swimming, you have faith. You know, I remember when we had gone to a place called Kamshet in Mumbai. There's a big dam over near Mumbai. There's a big dam over there, and the water is supposed to be 200 feet deep. And I love swimming in water, so I just ran and I jumped into the water and I was swimming. And my mother said, "Be careful! You know that water is 200 feet deep there." That was when it hit me that once you know swimming, it doesn't matter whether it's 10 feet or 100 feet or 200 feet. That is what faith does. You know, once you have once you have faith in the true sense as to what Swami defines faith to be, you actually don't depend on any more experiences. It doesn't depend on whether you are in deep waters or shallow waters. Faith is enough by itself, and it will result in experiences, but you are not dependent, but the faith is not dependent on those experiences.
Exactly. And another confusion which often comes, I feel the very question or this very debate comes out of that confusion.
Hmm.
When you talk of faith, if you see the way Swami defines faith, I remember, I think we've repeated this many times before, when some devotee asked Swami, that Swami, how do we have unwavering faith? And Swami's reply was, if it is wavering, it's not faith. So Swami's definition of faith is, it's binary, it's there or it's not there. Hmm. It's not like, is it there enough or do I have enough of it? It's there or it's not there. And when you say that faith which Swami defines as, Swami would say it's complete surrender. You know, not for a moment you are allowing any doubt to come into you, and that's the ultimate faith. But when we say that you need faith to experience, I don't think it's that faith that Swami says. Mm. It's not that faith which is ultimate, which as you said, does not need experience at all. Mm. Which is beyond, you know, it doesn't need the nourishment of experience. It's absolute by itself. But the faith which we are talking about when you talk of faith and experiences, it is that intuitive feeling. You know, when you see Swami, there are people who come to Swami for the first time and they lose their heart leaps and, you know, it's sealed then and there. But then you have this reasoning mind which throws up all kinds of questions, and he says, if he's God, why is he traveling in a luxury car? Or if he's God, why is he doing like this? If he's God, why is he speaking only in Telugu and he should be knowing all languages?
Mm.
And I think it is to settle these doubts that Swami actually throws a few experiences or miracles at you. So that faith is there and it's being silenced by this noise of the mind, and you're trying to silence the noise of the mind through these experiences which Swami gives us.
Exactly. You know, a miracle is defined that way, something that the mind can't explain. It is almost like God's way of saying that, hey mind, you are asking 100 questions. It appears as if you will accept anything only if there's an explanation. So here I throw you something that you just cannot explain. This is in order to convince you that there are some things that you can't explain, and in such matters you better shut up and don't, you know, poke and harm the person. So many times always it is the truth that miracles are necessary for the mind, because faith is something that is beyond the mind, that is something very, very deep that comes with our, you know, with our very birth itself. Again, I would like to, you know, come to this swimming analogy.
Mm-hmm.
It has been found, there is a documentary, it's called The Secret Life of Babies.
Okay.
And there are many other documentaries made on this which show that as soon as a baby is born, a few months old baby, you take the baby and put it in water, underwater, it's able to swim. It beats mm-hmm. its hand and legs in a coordinated fashion, which an adult can't do when he's learning swimming. At the same time, it also has got an amazing gag reflex, wherein it shuts the windpipe that connects to the lungs. So that even if the baby opens its mouth in water, if in case the water goes in, it goes in only into the stomach of the baby, not into the lungs. Of course, you know, after a while, after say about 20 seconds or 10 to 15 seconds, the baby needs adult support to, you know, be lifted out of the water so that it can take its breath.
Merely because of tiredness of the limbs.
Yes, tiredness of the limbs. Plus, you know, it doesn't come surface to take air.
Right.
It needs to take the air, but it knows swimming already. No, what is amazing I'm saying is, how come that this baby, once it becomes a 4-year-old, has to spend hours and weeks and months training to learn how to swim? So in the same way, I feel faith, as babies, if we think of it, we don't bother about where our next meal is coming from. We don't bother about our security. We just have faith. We are born with that kind of faith that, you know, there is someone about to love me, there's someone about to take care of me, there's someone about to guide me, there's someone about to take care of my everything. I just need not do anything, I just have to be. You know, as a baby, we just be. We just exist. And everything is taken care of. It is just that when we think we are growing, in quotes, I'm saying in quotes because we are actually not growing, because that is when the mind apparently is developing and we start getting doubts and the faith is damaged. So faith is something that is very pristine, that is the very, our very nature. Swami would ask, how do you know this is your father? I know it's my father because my mother told me, that's it, I have faith. I could say, you know, I could say that there is a doctor's certificate. But what if the doctor's certificate is forged? What if the doctor, that means, do you believe that doctor? You have faith in the doctor. No, I don't have faith. You can do a paternity test. Okay, the paternity test is based on some technique, based on some machines, which means you have faith in the machine. Or you have faith in that technique. So ultimately, somewhere you have to have faith somewhere to believe that this person is your father. The other way would be, I just believe that this is my father because my mother said, I have my faith. And after this, with this faith, my experience in life only redeems my faith. And I feel this is a more beautiful, more joyful and more fulfilling path to take, where we have faith based on what our heart says, and after that the experiences that follow just redeem our faith.
Very true. And I think that analogy which Swami gave was brilliant in that sense. You know, do you want to be a tree which it's enough if it's, you know, fed with water once, even in a few months? Or do you want to be that paddy which needs to be fed every day? You know, it's in that sense, definitely experience nourishes faith. But I think the goal of this whole journey should be like, how soon can I remove this faith from experience? How soon can I make this, you know, faith fundamental and
not dependent on it.
Not dependent on it. You know, the typical analogy which always comes to my mind is when you want to build a ceiling in a house. You know, you always have these props and the scaffoldings which you put so that the, you know, the layer of ceiling which you lay is held.
And the concrete curve.
But the very idea is someday you have to be able to remove this. Otherwise, what's the point in building a ceiling? You want to live in a house where you can remove all these scaffoldings and you can move about, right? And I think these experiences, these miracles, whatever you talk of, is for building that ceiling someday where, you know, at some time you, with confidence, can say that if it is there, it's there. If it's not there, it doesn't matter.
And it is possibly, you know, maybe the time already is 2 o'clock in the studios. So it is possibly, I feel, for this very reason that Swami removed himself physically from the world, so that the prop, you don't become so dependent on the prop that you make the prop into your house. Faith is something that is deep within oneself. One has to seek it within oneself. And we were given a chance where we could seek it from an external support. And we should, you know, not forget that once this external support, you know, when Swami has decided to withdraw from it physically, we think that it is all lost. We think that it's all gone. It is here that we have to remember what Swami told Rani Ma, that God is one who, apart from omniscience, has omnipresence and omnipotence. And if God is present everywhere at all points in time, why don't we start attempting to discover that Lord? And in order to start that attempt, faith is necessary, because I need to believe that He is omnipresent and omnipotent.
And maybe in conclusion, I'm reminded of what one of my friends shared with me, you know, in their interview. Swami looked at them and said, sing a bhajan. And they sang that bhajan, a very popular one, Sai Mata Pita. There those three lines come where you make actually three prayers to Swami.
Mujhe bhakti do,
mujhe shakti do, mujhe mukti do. Generally, I think even now the bhajan is sung in the order that you say mujhe shakti do, mujhe bhakti do and mujhe mukti do.
Yeah, the easiest to the toughest.
Right. When they sang that, Swami stopped them and Swami said it's the wrong order. Swami said first should be bhakti, the next should be shakti and the last is mukti. So saying that, you know, first you ask for bhakti, which is faith. Then you ask for means to hold on to that bhakti. That, you know, that you ask for that strength so that nothing can, you know, shake that faith or bhakti. That will automatically lead you to mukti.
With that, dear listeners, I don't think we have completed comprehensively our discussion on faith was experience, but we have successfully completed our 1.5 hours of satsang, which means that it's time for us to move out so that Brother Chandu can step in with his love to love. We really hope that you enjoyed this as much as we enjoyed having this satsang. As always, your thoughts and your feedback are always welcome. You can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. In the meanwhile, we offer our heartfelt gratitude to Swami for all that He has done for us, for all that He keeps doing for us. And we bring this satsang to a close. We'll conclude with this song, the other side of which you will be joined in by Brother Chandu with Love to Love.
Kali Avatara Sai Narayana. Parti